Hey you! Yes you! The one who is tuning in to the RankC show right now. Are you suffering from stiff neck, soreness, or muscle tension over your neck area daily? Well, fret not, because Moza has the solution for you. Introducing the Moza AI Robo Hands Neck Massager. It is a wearable solution for consumers to use on a daily basis to combat against the problem of tension and stress that can build up with everyday lifestyles. The massager features a neck-worn design that utilizes gentle vibration and tapping massage treatments to effectively alleviate build-up tension in the neck. The unit also provides Moza hot heat therapy to help the muscles feel more primed for tension release. Now, what are you waiting for? You can go to www.mozarelax.com and get yours now. As we all know, running a business is both an art and science. If you are only good at one of them, or in the worst case, neither, you will most likely become one of the 65% of people who fail. Greatness in business isn't simply achieved, it's earned, like what Max Lewis has mentioned on his book cover. And what separates successful entrepreneurs from unsuccessful people isn't luck or chance, it's an unyielding belief in their vision and their tireless efforts to transform even the most far-fetched of dreams into reality. Well, in this episode, it's really our honor and pleasure to have actually invited an inspiring entrepreneur, and his name is none other than Max Lewis. So Max, over 20 years of experience and an excess of $100 million in cumulative sales, he has proven to be one of the most effective and successful entrepreneurs of the 21st century. He knows how to create phenomenal business results, yet the road to success had its tough and grand lessons for him on the way there. For Max, life has been a challenge, and reflecting on his lessons is how he cements his truth. And with a unique vigor to take action, he has gained a wealth of knowledge and wisdom well beyond his years and has written them into this spectacular book, Who is Max Lewis? 37 chapters, 37 lessons, $37 million. So, well, without further ado, let's welcome Max into the podcast. Woohoo! All right.
Thank you, Rayson. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. How about yourself?
Excellent. Thanks for having me on the show. What time is it where you are right now? 7 a.m.?
Oh, it's 8 a.m. right now, 8:05.
8 a.m. Okay, great.
Yes.
For me, it is 7:05. PM.
Yeah. Wow, nice. Okay. Oh, so man, I mean, like when I saw your book on Book Thinkers and also on Laura Castleman's IG story, I was like, hey, this is interesting. And I saw the book itself, I saw the how it's being packaged. I was like, wow, this book is really amazing. And we're gonna talk about your book in a short while. And I'll definitely let the listeners know more about this book later on and why they should be getting this book for 2023 before, you know, Christmas, or even during Christmas, you can buy this as a present for your friends and your family as well. And Max, can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Okay, so I basically started a business. So I'll tell you what the book is about. The book is about my entrepreneurial journey, and it's one part my story and another part a practical workbook that is designed to enlighten and help the reader achieve success, not only in business, but also in life. So at the end of each chapter, there's reflections on what happened in that chapter, and then there'll be some questions for you to kind of journal and do some thinking time on. So my story is about a business that I started with zero customers. I literally started with one customer, and I grew the business to, it was a propane gas company. I grew that to be the largest independent operation in the state of Florida. And I inevitably sold the business to AmeriGas, which is the largest propane gas company in the entire country, and sold it for $37 million.
Wow. Okay. So can you tell us more like how this propane gas business function? Is it like, is it like an oil and gas company kind of thing where you sell people gases, or how does it work?
Yeah. So I don't know if you have it in Singapore, but there's like these little propane tanks. And in the United States, we call them barbecue tanks. They connect to your barbecue, right?
Oh, okay.
And people go to usually gas stations or hardware stores or supermarkets to exchange them. They drop off the empty one, they pick up a full one. And my business was essentially that. I started delivering directly to someone, and then I started delivering to the restaurants, and then I started delivering to the gas stations, and I just kept getting more and more customers until I grew the business as large as I basically wanted to grow it, and then sold it.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. I mean, like, this kind of business is so niche, and not many people would have gone into this. But can you tell us more on the backstory on how you actually decided to be an entrepreneur in this industry?
Sure. I actually wanted to be a chef, believe it or not. That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to cook. And I was working at a car wash, and my father had a station where he would fill these barbecue tanks. It was a propane station. And he had one truck that he used to deliver gas to, and one truck where he used to do installations, where he'd install like the gas piping for restaurants. So while I was waiting to go to college, I thought I was going to college, he offered me a part-time job to fill those tanks at his station on the weekends. So I took the job. I was making $70 a day, and I was filling those tanks. And what happened was a guy came in and he asked, "Do you guys deliver this? Does this company deliver these tanks?" And the answer is no. At that time, nobody really delivered those tanks because there wasn't enough money to be made. But the gentleman needed so many of them. He needed 10. And since he needed 10, I said, you know what? Maybe I can make some money here because he's using a large volume. So basically what I did was I said, hey, look, if you're going to take 10, I'm going to charge you basically $50 to go do the delivery. And at first he said no. And he said, oh, crazy, $50 extra. That's a ripoff. But the guy kept coming back. And eventually I convinced him. So I did his delivery, and I ended up buying the gas for less money than I thought I could get it for. And long story short, I made like $100. So when I made that first $100, I said, man, you know, if I could just find five more people or four more people like this guy, I can make $100 a day, which is more than I'm making now as an employee. I wonder if there's more people that could utilize this service, that need this service. So I had the idea. But I didn't do anything about it. I just thought about it for a while. And then one day I was telling my girlfriend, hey, I have this idea and I think I can make money. And she looks at me one day and she's like, why don't you just do it? Why don't you stop talking about it and do it? Why don't you just go make a business card and see if someone else is interested? So that's what I did. I went and made a business card. I started handing out my business card. And long story short, I started getting customers. And I eventually turned that into that hustle, because it was a hustle. I turned it into a business, and, you know, little by little, the business grew. I ended up, you know, hiring my first employee, which was a friend of mine. And, you know, by the time I sold the business, I had 70 employees. So it's a cool story. And in the book, I literally detail every single thing I did, the opportunities that I saw and how I took action on those opportunities in order to get to the next step. You know, because that's one of the most important things in business. And I feel like a lot of authors don't detail how exactly they did things. And I put in the book like exactly what I did, what I was thinking. And then the questions at the end of the chapter are like, well, what kind of situation do you have in your life that could be similar? And here are the things that you should be thinking about. So that's basically the story in a nutshell.
Oh, nice. Well, then, don't mind me asking, how long did it take you to actually reach like this kind of success? Was it like more than 5 years or 10 years? Or
so to reach success or to sell the business?
To sell the business, the success of it, and then after that, selling the business.
Okay, so it took, I was in the business for 15 years total, but I was a millionaire maybe 3 years later, like maybe 3 years, 4 years after starting the business, I was already had a net worth of over $1 million. So I was making money and I had money. Selling the business was like the cherry on top, but I was already a millionaire way before I sold. And largely because I got the money that I made and I invested it into real estate. So every time I made some extra money, I'd say, okay, I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to buy an apartment or a warehouse or whatever real estate I deemed as a good investment opportunity. And that made me a millionaire and also made me good rental income without having to do any additional work. Since rental properties are passive, I didn't have to really focus on the rental property. I could still focus on my business and make money renting those properties and then benefit from the properties appreciating in value over time.
Okay, I understand. And quick question, Max, when do you know when is the right time to go all in with what you're doing?
I think it's extremely important to bet on yourself. And right. I think you should always go all in if what you're doing is important to you and that's what you want to do. I don't really believe in splitting focus because it's very difficult to make progress if you're splitting your focus. So, for example, let's say we had 5 trees in front of us and 1 pot of water. If we poured a little bit of water on each tree, they're all going to grow a little bit. But if we said, you know what, get rid of 4 of them, we're just going to water 1, that tree's going to grow, right? Because it's getting all of the attention, all the water, it's getting poured into that tree, so it's going to grow. And business is the same. You know, if you're trying to do 5 things at once or 10 things at once or even 3 things at once, it's not the same as if you say, I'm going to go all in on this one project. And a common misconception that people have is, in order to get rich, you need to diversify. That's not true. In order to get rich, you need to focus on one thing. After you get rich, to stay rich, you diversify. To stay rich. Picture a table with the 4 legs. Well, if you have an ability, if, for example, let's say we have a table with 4 legs. If we knock off 1 leg, what happens? The table falls, right? So what happens, the strategy of diversification is, once you start making a lot of money, you're adding more legs under that table. So let's say instead of 4 legs, I add more investments under this table. So let's say now I have 20. Racing comes along and kicks 2 of those legs out. What happens to the table? Nothing. Now I have 18. That table is completely fine. And that's why you diversify. You keep adding to this so that something comes by and nothing happens to you. But if you don't spread it out, one leg goes off. You're done, right? 2 legs, forget it. You know, so that's how you stay rich, but definitely not how you get rich.
So that means to say that when we first start out in any kind of business, we have to focus on one niche, one project, one purpose before we go and look for other opportunities in other areas of businesses, in a sense.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And it's important to also to make the distinction. When you're starting an activity, right? So for example, let's say you have 10 hours in a day, right? And right now you're spending all 10 hours on your podcast. And you say, you know what? Instead of just doing a podcast, now I'm gonna start a gardening business, right? Completely different thing, right? And you're like, okay, shit, this is a completely different thing. So now you have to split your time. And you say, okay, 5 hours with podcast, 5 hours with gardening, and you literally just split your chances in 2. That sucks. Right. That sucks. I'd rather say, let's not do a podcast. We're only doing gardening, or let's not do gardening. Stick to the podcast until I get to where I'm trying to go, because you're literally giving half the effort. And like, if you do 3 things or 4 things, you know, of course it keeps getting watered down and you're not going to be as effective. So let me give you an example. You want to do a podcast. You want to be the best guy with a podcast in the world or in Singapore, let's say. If the best guy in the world is putting all of his time and energy into his podcast and you're putting 20%, he's going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
He's going to kick your ass. He's going to kick your ass because you're not putting the same amount of energy and attention. So that's why it's important to have that concentrated focus and effort into whatever it is you're doing. If you're taking it seriously and you really want to grow in whatever it is, focus one thing at a time.
Yeah, totally. So true. I agree with you on that. We have to really focus on one thing and make sure that we dive deep in, and probably like what some of them would always say, niche it down until, you know, you get it more precise in what you want.
Okay. And once it starts going better, you know, let's say it grows, you hire some qualified people and you can kind of take a step back and maybe, you know, do other things, always keeping an eye, but you got to get there first. Once you've gotten to where you're, then you can say, okay, let me, you know, pursue other interests, let's say.
Okay, got it. And Max, I'm pretty sure that while you're building your business up, you would have met some failures along the way, right? So Max, can you tell us, do you have a favorite failure of yours? And how has that failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
Well, let me tell you, the road to success is paved with failures, and there's a lot of them. And I think if you have the right attitude about failures, they're extremely beneficial because you learn. Every failure isn't, it's really not a failure. It's just a learning experience. I would say my favorite failure, gosh, it's a good question, but I've never really thought of my favorite failure. I can tell you my biggest hurdle, one of my biggest hurdles, there's a lot of big hurdles, but one of my biggest hurdles was, there's a part in the book where I talk about having to pay a large sum of money in order to get 100% ownership of my business back. And it was over $4 million. And I couldn't like deal with it. Like I couldn't get over it. You know, I had to pay this money to get my company back, which to me made absolutely no sense. And I just could not rationalize it. I didn't want to do it. So I agonized about it. I complained and bitched about it for, you know, I don't know how long. But eventually what I ended up doing was getting a loan and doing the deal and getting my business back. And it was a hard pill to swallow. I don't think anybody wants to spend $4 million that they don't have to spend if they don't have to.
Right.
But as a result of that setback, AKA failure, I put so much energy and bet on myself so much. Like failure was not an option anymore. And I just dedicated my entire heart and soul to guaranteeing that I was going to be successful no matter what, no matter what the odds were, no matter what the challenges were. So in a sense, having that debt that I had to incur to in order to get my business back, it helped me. It was like fuel. Now I was already motivated, but this made it like even more, you know, really lit a fire under me to execute. And I did, you know, and I did. So that was a pretty big challenge that I overcame that I would say is my favorite failure.
Okay. And Max, can you tell us like what's your thought process during that period of time? Like, you know, in reacquiring your business back, like, was it something that you didn't want to sell back then? Or it's something that you realized that, I can do more with this company. I just miss, you know, being the founder, being the CEO of this company. So that's why I want to reacquire it back.
So what was that
process?
Yeah, let me give you some context. So my mistake was that I let my brother become my partner in my business. And then a partnership with him did not work out. And we fought a lot and a lot of things happened. And in order to get him out, he wanted that amount of money. So that's what it was. So it led to me, I was on a sabbatical. I left the business for 14 months while I was trying to figure out what I was going to do and how I was going to get my business back and how I was going to get him out of the business. And during that time, in the beginning, I was like, I don't want the business, keep the business, you know, whatever. And then after a while, I said, man, you know what? I do want the business. This is my business, my baby. It's my child. There's no problem with me running the business. The problem is the partnership. The partnership is the problem. So I need to get out of this partnership. And that's where I struggled, because having to give him that amount of money, obviously, again, not an easy pill to swallow. But once I did it, I was able to, you know, cut the parachute, so to speak, and not focus on problems anymore, only focus on growing the business and making it better and getting more customers, etc. So that's why,
Okay, I understand. Oh, now I got a clearer picture. So are you saying that it is best advice not to partner up with your family member and get someone more professional or more experienced, knowledgeable in your business as compared to a family member?
Yeah. So in my experience, absolutely. So here's the thing that people do, myself included. I did this, obviously. So this is what young or unseasoned entrepreneurs have a tendency to do. They start a business, right? Let's say I start a business right now. I'm going to start selling these cups. And I'm like, hey, my best friend's Rayson. We're great friends. Rayson, why don't we become partners? Right? And you say, yeah, I don't got anything to do. Let's do it. Let's get into this cup selling business. Now, here's the problem with that. I asked you to be my partner because you're my friend. You agreed to be my partner because you're my friend. And you probably said, this could be fun and it's a good opportunity. But that's not the right way to make a business decision. The right way to make a business decision is, for example, let's use this case, selling cups. I'm going to want to look for someone. If I'm looking for a partner, I'm going to probably look for someone who's already in the space, has knowledge on selling cups, on manufacturing cups, things of that nature. Someone who maybe has sales experience. I didn't ask you if you have sales experience. I don't know if you've ever even used a cup. You're just my friend. So the problem is I'm getting someone who's unqualified, right?
Right.
Instead of someone who's qualified, instead of looking for the guy who could be the best partner, maybe the guy who has money to put in, right? Maybe I find a guy who has money, already sells cups. You know, like, there could be so many things, so many benefits to getting a better quality partner. But a lot of young entrepreneurs, they just grab their cousin, their friend, their brother, a guy that I know. Yeah, I know this guy. He said he'd do it with me. Cool, let's do it. And it's like, yeah, man, that's not the best. It's probably not the best decision, you know. So that, in my experience, you know, I learned that lesson. I learned it with my brother and I learned it with hiring my friends. You know, when I needed employees, I just called my friends. Hey, man, what are you doing Saturday? I need someone to help me. Right. Instead of trying to find someone, like I needed help doing deliveries. So I should have found someone who drove trucks for a living. Someone who had a commercial driver's license, you know, people who were good with directions. You know, there's a lot of things, the questions I could have asked someone to get the best person to help me. And I didn't do that. I'm like, hey, Rayson, you want to help me Saturday? Let's go. Like, I wasted a lot of time and energy hiring the wrong people in the beginning because I didn't know any better. I didn't know how to ask the right questions in order to get the right people to help me.
Okay, I understand. Okay, got it. Yeah, so for those of you who are tuning in, before you ask your family, make sure you ask the right questions. Make sure you ask yourself, are they doing this for a living? Are there strengths in this kind of thing that you needed them to help out in? And then from there, you can, you know, look through their resume in a sense and get to know whether do they fit the bill. And I'm pretty sure, you know, Max, while you were actually building your business up, I'm pretty sure you have met a lot of mentors, or you would have hired some mentors, coaches to actually guide you through. So can you tell us, like, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from your mentor?
Well, I've had a couple mentors. Actually, I want to touch on something real quick before we switch subjects. So the other part of the hiring thing, if you're going to partner with someone, the other biggest thing that you could possibly do, the most important thing you could do, is have an operating agreement between the partners with specific roles in the company, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, if we're going to partnership and you and I are going to get into a partnership, I'm going to have in the operating agreement, Max's job is to sell the cups. Rayson's job is to host the podcast. If Rayson doesn't hold the podcast, what happens? Right? There needs to be something in there, because that's the thing that happens with family partnerships, friend partnerships. They often don't make agreements. And then when the shit hits the fan, now we're in court and we're fighting and it's like, well, you said this and that. It's like, okay, man, if we just had a document that said everything that's supposed to happen, and if it doesn't happen, you leave the business or I buy you out or whatever, that will save a lot of stress and time. Okay. So yeah. I just want to make sure you got that. Okay.
All right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right, cool. And then as far as mentors go, my two main mentors have been Tony Robbins and Keith Cunningham. I don't know if you've ever read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yes. So Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah. So Robert's rich dad, it really obviously wasn't really his dad. He was character is based off of Keith Cunningham. Keith Cunningham is the rich dad. Yeah. And he taught me a lot about business. And Tony obviously taught me a lot about life and emotions and things of that nature. As far as best piece of advice in a business setting, I would say it came from Keith Cunningham, and his advice was to put the culture of the business first and to put your employees first instead of putting your customers first. Because if you take care of your customers, if you take care of your employees will take care of your customers. If your employees are happy, that happiness translates over to your customers. So taking care of your employees first, making sure they're taken care of and happy and their financial needs are met and the environment is good and they're happy working for you, that's the key to success, in my opinion.
Right. But you do know that sometimes there are some rotten eggs in a company, right? So how do you deal with this kind of rotten eggs that will not pollute the culture?
I write about this in the book. So when my company had already gotten pretty large, which, by the way, simple answer is you fire them. You have to fire those people. You have to fire them. But to give you an example, I had to fire my first employee when my company was already quite large, and the guy had worked there for over 10 years. It was really hard to do because he was resting on his laurels, but he had a really crappy attitude. And, you know, we had a team of, let's say, 20 people, 30 people, whatever, and everybody was happy. And then he was the, you know, oh my God, you know, everything sucks, whatever. So I put up with it for a while, longer than I should have. But you really got to cut that quick, man. At this stage in my career, if I was running a business like that again, I'll have one conversation. One. Hey, dude, turn the attitude around. Is there something I can help you with? Is everything okay at home? Whatever. If all those things, if that person's fine, you need to cut the bullshit. You need to come to work and be a team player. And if you're not, bye. Bye. Because I don't want a rotten apple ruining my bunch. And I don't want it to affect the rest of my team. We're all running east and this guy's pulling west. Like, no, man. No, we can't have that. Because that would really hurt the growth of your business. So eliminate those people immediately. Whether they're your friend, family, whatever. You don't have time for that, man. Nobody has time for that. If you don't want to be here, or if you don't have the right attitude, go somewhere else. You'll be happier and we will be happier, right? So it doesn't have to be a fight, but go somewhere where you'll be happier. And we will be happier because we don't have to deal with a stank attitude.
I agree. I mean, corporate these days, or even in the hospitals or whichever organizations, they're definitely rotten apples. But sometimes, probably because like the management felt that, oh, we should give this guy a chance, and probably give them too long a chance, and that's why it got worse and worse, and the culture got polluted from there. And that's why, you know, I'm pretty sure those who are tuning in to this episode, they will actually realize that, hey, I need to fire this person before the culture gets worse and worse eventually. And
you should give them a chance. A chance. <You know? laughs> A chance. I'm going to give you a chance. If you keep pushing it, and if you, you know, when I run my businesses, I communicate a lot with everyone, especially my managers. Hey, what's going on? How's the energy? What do we need? What's happening? And you'll hear, if there's a rotten egg, you start to keep hearing, Rayson has a bad attitude. Rayson came to work late. Rayson left work early. Rayson got in a fight with a customer. Okay, Rayson's my problem. Rayson, come in the office. What's up, man? What's going on? I've been getting a lot of complaints about you. No, that's everyone else. Well, hey, listen, we're not pointing fingers. We come here to work. We come here to make the customers happy. We want a happy environment. I'm going to give you a chance. If I keep getting complaints, you got to go. And that's it. They could either turn it around or bye. That's it. Don't waste time with that.
Okay. Got it. Wow. This is really good, especially for those who are tuning in, who are working as a manager or higher management. You can actually apply this to your company and your employees as well. And now, Max, to the main focus of our interview, I'm just curious, like, what inspired you to actually write your book, Who is Max Lewis? And of course, this title is so interesting. I mean, like, usually people will say, oh, how to be a millionaire or whatever topic, title it comes with. But then this is really interesting how you title your book, Who is Max Lewis, right? And it's very intriguing, and it piques a lot of people's curiosity from there, I would say.
So the reason I wrote the book is actually not what you might think. So a lot of people kept asking me to write a book. People knew my story, people that were close to me and friends and family and things like that. They were like, man, your story is awesome. You should really write a book about it. And I kept hearing that. That kept happening and it kept happening and kept happening. And people kept suggesting that. And then when COVID happened and I had nothing to do, I said, well, I guess I'm going to write a book about it. So I took on the challenge of writing the book. So I wrote the book. Now, the name of the book. So all the characters in the book and all the business names have been changed. So I changed all the names, all the characters. The title of the book, Who is Max Lewis? You have to finish the book to understand it fully. So I can't give you away all the, you know, I can't give you the whole story away. But
okay,
you know, that'll be answered for you when you finish reading the book.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
Hold on. And lastly, I wrote the book. I started writing the book for that reason that I mentioned, but I quickly realized once I started writing that I had a lot of things to share and I wanted to educate people and help people. And I know for a fact that the book does that, especially based off of the reviews that we've had. We've only had 5-star reviews, which is a blessing. I'm like super grateful for that. And I've gotten like so many testimonials. It's really heartwarming. So I know that it's a special book and it's helping a lot of people every day. And, you know, that I think that's wonderful. And by the way, I donate money to charity. I'm not making money off the book or anything like that. So just so you know that.
Okay. Understand. I mean, like, for those of you who are tuning in, for those of you who are interested in buying the book, you can go to Amazon. And you can go and search for Who is Max Lewis, and this book is gonna be something that will change your mindset, your perspective about business and life as well, based on Max lessons that he has learned, the 37 lessons that he has learned, in fact. And I'm pretty sure you guys can actually check it out. And if you want to know more about his book, can go to his website as well, who is maxlewis.com. And you can actually figure out, you know, whether this book suits you or not. And especially a lot of entrepreneurs are reading this book, I would say. And why should millennial entrepreneurs, for example, or the Gen Z entrepreneurs purchase this book?
There's a lot of foundational knowledge here that people need. And that's been, I mean, one of the key takeaways from a lot of the entrepreneurs that have reached out to me after reading the book. It's like, man, it changed my life. Somebody sent me a video today, a video testimonial. It was really cool. And she's an entrepreneur and an author. And she read the book. Nice. And she was like, I'm going to send you the video. It's really cool. A really nice video she sent me. But, you know, she's like, oh, it changed my life. There's so many lessons here and things to think about that the average person's not going to think about. And they're only lessons you can teach if you've experienced them, you know? So with my experience, my hope is that I could help other people succeed faster than I did and not make the same mistakes that I did. And, you know, that's the goal and that's what we're doing. So,
okay, cool. And Max, what were the struggles you faced while in the process of writing this book?
Oh man, there was a lot. I never even owned a laptop. You know that? This laptop that I'm on right now, I bought this laptop so I could write the book. Oh, I never had a laptop. Okay. Never. I never had one. When I ran my business, I had a lot of employees that would, you know, send emails and things like that. I never really had to do that. So I learned how to type writing this book. And I learned a lot about writing books, and the process was kind of a pain. I isolated myself. I have a second home in the Florida Keys, which is like by the ocean. I have a house on the ocean. And I sat there and I wrote everything. And some of the things I learned was like, you know, I tried to perfect it. Every paragraph, I tried to make it perfect. It was a mistake. I learned that, you know, you really kind of just have to have your rough draft, get it out, and then you can edit later and make it perfect, whatever. So that was a learning experience. And I'll tell you what, I learned a lot about myself too. I think writing for not just entrepreneurs, for everyone, is very cathartic. It's very helpful because when you write things, whether it's your goals and dreams, which is awesome and that's positive, but you could also write things that are emotional, that hurt you. You know, someone might have hurt you, or your parents or a friend or whatever. When you write things, you kind of release it, you know, and you kind of get that weight off of you. And that is really helpful for us, for human beings. So I learned that, and it's great. You know, I grew a lot just in writing the book. So very happy about doing that. A lot of people have asked me if I'm writing another one. And I was like, man, it was a lot of work. I don't know if I want to write another one, but it was fun.
Okay, but you know, since a lot of people have been asking you for volume two, what will volume two be like in retrospect? I mean, like
okay, so I'll tell you what people have told me, and I'll tell you what I have considered. So someone actually asked me to write a children's book to help kids understand business and things like that, which I thought was pretty cool. I was like, you know, that actually sounds fun. Yeah. And then the other one, which I kind of wrote a little bit, not maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I actually kind of like the idea. So now I do a lot of coaching and consulting for businesses, and I've helped a lot of people become millionaires with their businesses. Hey, we'll go in there, give them some advice. They turn it around. They make a lot of money. That's great. So the premise, the idea was, why not write a book compiled of all the short stories of who, like the person that came for me for help, what they needed, how I helped them, and then how they made money. Like, you know, like a short,
maybe testimonial.
Like maybe each chapter, maybe each story is like a chapter. But like, for example, let's say the chapter 5 will be how I helped Rayson grow his podcast to be the biggest podcast in Singapore. And then I'll, hey, I met Rayson in Singapore. We did this research, blah, 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 blah. And this is how he did it. And that's the chapter. So I was like, you know what? That actually is kind of cool because I already have all the stories. So I could just write them. So I wrote one the other day and I was like, yeah, it's pretty cool. But right now with the podcast, all this that's going on with the book, I was like, let me work on it maybe when I have a little more time.
Yeah, yeah. And probably like, you know, have one for women, specifically for women.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because, you know, Chicken Soup for the Soul has for women. Certain business books has for women as well. And they targeted children, women, and probably yours would have this kind of idea as well. And it might appeal to a group of a lot of women. And who knows, your book will be on maybe Oprah or any other channels, for example, that resonates with women as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, you never know, man. A lot could happen. I'll tell you what, right now with this book, a lot of the reviews is women. Women. You would, and a lot of the people are not entrepreneurs. You know, I had a guy reach out to me, maybe it was like 5 months ago, and he's like a young entrepreneur. He gave the book to his grandmother. She was in her 90s. And she read the book and she was like, she loved the book. I was like, man, that's crazy, you know? Yeah. It's like, I love the story. It's great. I was like, oh, that's cool, man.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. So for your book wise, you didn't have an editor, or did you hire an editor to help you edit, or it's just purely you?
Yeah, no, I wrote my whole book. That's something I'm very like, no. I strongly feel if you're gonna write a book, write a book. Don't hire a ghostwriter, write your own book. Because if not, you didn't write it, you know?
Right.
I, for me, it's like every word had to be like, these are my words. This is how I want to say it. That was very important to me. If not, I didn't write the book. What I did hire was someone to help me with the grammar and the punctuations, like comma and period and things like that. So that I had someone check it to make sure, because I had a lot of mistakes with, you know, exclamation point goes here or whatever, stuff like that. But the writing... it's 100% my writing.
Okay, cool, yeah. Cool. And do you have any advice for aspiring authors for this kind of you know, how long does it take? Would they expect themselves to actually write a chapter or to finish the book and things like that? How much patience they need to actually do that?
Yeah. I actually have great advice for an author, for an aspiring author, and it's advice that helped me. There's a gentleman called Chandler Bolt, and he has a short video on YouTube. I think it's like 12 minutes long or something, where he explains how you can create a simple format, an outline, to start writing your book. So it's extremely simple and extremely helpful. And the way that he explains it, you know, anyone can write a book. If you do what he tells you to do, anyone can write a book, you know? So right. Like to give you an example, it's kind of like I did with my friend that he's a hunter. We actually made a video about this. They're going to post it soon. For example, my friend is a hunter. He tells me, man, I really want to write a book. I don't know what to write it on. And I'm like, so what are your hobbies? He's like, I'm a hunter. I was like, okay, I know that. And he's like one of this huge hunter in his world. He's very popular. Right? He's badass, you know, best hunter, whatever. He hunts deer. I said, okay, so the choice is obvious. Why don't you write a book about hunting? Okay, but I don't know what to start. I don't know what to say. I don't know. Okay, perfect. Let me give you an example. In hunting, there's different elements. So let's say you're going to write a book about hunting. You're going to write about the kind of weapon you're going to use, shotgun, bow and arrow, knife, whatever. You're going to talk about the kind of things that you're hunting, deer, bear, geese, whatever. Right. You're going to talk about the areas that you're going to hunt. You'll talk about the seasons that you're going to hunt, right? These are just some examples. And then when you get into, for example, we're going to start hunting deer. Okay, talk to me about deer. Make it, you know, deer between these ages and these ages. You can't hunt at this time of year. You can't hunt small deer. they taste better like this, you cook them, you know, whatever. You could just write all those things, you put it together and you have a book. I mean, it's pretty simple.
True. Okay. Yeah. Well, look at that guy's YouTube channel. Was it Colton? Chandler Bolt.
B-O-L-T. Chandler Bolt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. We'll go and check it out. That 12 minutes video, you guys can also check it out as well. And of course, you know, back to your book, Max, I would like to actually ask you, right, you know, out of these 37 foundational lessons that you have, so what are your top three lessons you believe can help to fuel entrepreneurship success for any individual and why?
Okay, so I'll give you three that are foundational for me anyway. So number one is knowing exactly what you want and how you're defining success. Everyone defines success differently, and it's important that you distinguish and you understand what is success for me. You know, maybe for you, it's making $1 million. Maybe for me, it's having a paid off apartment. Maybe for my friend down the street, he needs $1 billion. Everyone has a different idea of success. I personally, my definition of success is freedom. I like freedom. I'm not necessarily so much money driven. I don't need lots of things. What I need is to wake up in the morning and do whatever the hell I want to do. If I want to go fishing, go fishing. If I want to fly to Singapore, I'll fly to Singapore. I'm free because that's the way I set up my life. And I designed my life that way because I know that that's what's important to me at this stage in my life. So number one, knowing what you want, do the work, journal, really figure out what's important to you and what it is that you want. Number two would be to be consistent in achieving what your intent is. A lot of people give up prematurely. They start doing it. They get a little resistance. It's hard. They give up. I mean, I've seen it so many times, and that just tells me, look, you really didn't want it bad enough. So we go back to lesson number one, know what you want. Because if you really wanted it, guess what? It would have happened in number two. You wouldn't have given up. You wouldn't have given up. Right? Okay. Right. So that's number two. And number three is don't give up. Never give up, man. When you know what you want, right? And you're consistent, you're going to hit roadblocks. Things are going to happen. Things are going to happen that you're going to make you want to give up. Mm-hmm. Don't give up. Don't give up. Ask questions. Be resourceful. Go after it, man. Go after it. Educate yourself. And don't stop until you get what you want.
Right. But sometimes, you know, it's so easy to say, hey, I shouldn't give up. But this guy, for example, built a business. And then next moment, his business failed. And his other supporting diversified income also failed. NFT, crypto, real estate, for example, crash, for example, and his main business, he's going bankrupt in a sense. Mm-hmm. How on earth can we tell this guy not to give up? And maybe his wife is divorcing him and wanting to pull his son or children away from him.
Right. Okay, so there's a lot to this. Is great. So for example, we got to rewind the tape. If I'm that person, let's say number one, I want to know is what are the lessons here? What did I learn? Right? What was my objective with getting into NFT and crypto? Was I doing it for the money? Was I trying to be rich and buy a Lamborghini, or was I trying to have money to secure my family to make sure that I had a roof over my head? Like, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered there. So number one is I question the motive. What was the motive behind this endeavor? Number two, well, and obviously the family wanting to leave you and the kids. I mean, I don't know who this person is in this scenario, but I could guarantee you that the person in this scenario would value his wife and kid a lot more than this business. And what happens, I absolutely know, is people make the mistake of putting money, fame, riches, cars over the family. And it's like, man, if we really drill down into what's important for you, it's really the family, right? And the money and the riches and the fame is down here. So back to number one again, getting clear what is important for me in my life? So anyway, stepping that aside, what are the lessons that I learned? What are the lessons that I learned from this failure? And how am I going to apply those lessons going forward? Was NFT a bad investment? Maybe it was. Why? Right? Maybe it's a non-tangible asset. Maybe it's not controlled by the federal government. There's a lot of things that you could say, oh, shit, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't have put money in NFTs. And maybe the lesson is I just made a bad investment because I was chasing a carrot, like they say, and I was blinded by the opportunity to make money fast. And guess what? Usually people who try to make money fast end up getting screwed in the long run. So right. There's a lot of lessons, dude. Those failures, yeah, it sucks. Nobody wants to go through that. But if you're paying attention, you will win. You can learn from that and say, okay, I learned all these lessons. Have a notepad, write down all the lessons that you learned, and how am I going to apply this next? I'm never going to invest in NFTs anymore, or I'm only going to invest in NFTs that are regulated, or maybe instead of NFTs, I go into real estate. Whatever. There's lessons. Right. So that would be my advice to that person. I personally know someone who lost $300 million in, I think it was called Terra Luna, something like that.
Oh, yes.
$300 million. He lost it. Okay? Think about that. And when he told me, because he invested $60 million in cash, and it went up to $300 million, and he never sold it. And when he personally told me he lost all that money, I said, you know, you really got to check your motives, bro. Like, you already had $60 million in cash and you put it in and it went all the way up to 300 and you still didn't sell it. Like, why? Like, what are you chasing? You know what you're chasing? Ego. He wanted to say, I made $1 billion on Terra Luna or whatever. And it's just dumb. That's not really important, man. What could you do with 60 million? A lot, right? You can live a pretty good life with 60. He already had it. And then he lost it all. And it's just like, I don't know. So I would check. You got to check in with yourself and figure out what's really important and apply it accordingly. Be smart about things, you know?
I agree on that. Especially when it comes to, you know, investing or, you know, putting your money into something that is hyped up and then you don't even know what the hell is it, and you didn't do your research and you just put your money in just because you trust your friend or trust the analyst that actually mentioned about this, and then poof, next moment, man, within a few months it's gone. And
so check it out.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things wrong with this scenario. Number one, that's like a follow the crowd mentality. Number two, let's draw it here for you real quick. Let's make it the NFT. You're following this crowd, the NFT crowd. If you stepped outside of this crowd and you talked to some other people, they would have a completely different opinion about NFT. But if you're only getting your advice and your opinions and talking about NFT with all the people in this circle, guess what you're going to hear? It's amazing. Put more money, buy more of it, do as much as you can, blah, 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 blah. You would have walked across the street and talked to me. I would have said, Rayson, are you fucking out of your mind? Right? Right?
Right.
Are you out of your fucking mind? Like, why are you doing that, man? Invest your money in real estate. Pay off your house. Do something else that's not this risky, especially with money that might cost you your marriage and your family and your house and all your stuff. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. Successful people, they don't gamble. They invest. I don't gamble my money. I invest it. Education. Mm-hmm. I say, oh, there's a piece of land there. They want $2 million. We could build 300 apartment buildings. I'm going to invest into that. That seems like a good idea. If we don't build the buildings, my money is still there because the land is still worth something, right? That's an investment. That's an educated investment. You're not going to see me go to Las Vegas and get $2 million and put it on black and roll the dice. I'm not going to do that, right? Because a stupid decision is a stupid decision, whether it's this big or this big. Stupid is stupid, right? And you don't need to gamble to make money. Yes, yeah, sometimes you'll take, let's say, a risk. Like, there is some risk baked into business. But a straight up gamble, you're not going to see a lot of very successful people gambling. You know, you're just not going to see that. You're not going to see Warren Buffett in the casino in Las Vegas. You're not going to see that. Right? You're never going to see him at the blackjack table. Hit me. You're not going to see that. So that's something that a lot of people got, like, they just had the horse blinders on and they're like, oh, NFT. Yeah, man, that's a pyramid. That's exactly what happened. They built it up. When there was enough money, they took it off and all that. It's a very old concept. That's been around for freaking, you know, who knows how long the pyramid scheme has been around. Right? So unfortunately, what happens there, again, if you're just getting your information from one source and that source is like, NFTs. Well, yeah, bro. Why don't you go get a different opinion from someone else who hates NFTs? Even if it's just for perspective. Let's say you've made up your mind and you're still going to do it. Educate yourself. Get another person's perspective. Hey, what do you think about this? I hate it because of all these reasons. Bro, and then gain the knowledge and say, you know what? I didn't even think about those things. Maybe I'm still going to do it because I'm hard-headed. But you get the knowledge. You get the knowledge and you learn something and then you make your own decision. And then if you've gotten advice from this side and that side, and at the end of the day, you still want to go in a certain direction, you made your own decision. But you know what the worst feeling in the world is? My friend told me to do it. He told me to invest in it. She told me to do it. And then you lost all your money. And who do you have to blame now? Who do you blame? You blame them. But whose fault is it? Your fucking fault.
Yep.
Right. It's your fault. But the first thing is, he told me to do it. And they told me to. And I read this article on NFTs and they said to invest. And guess what, bro? At the end of the day, it's your fault. It's your fault.
Yep.
Learn and apply it to the next one. The game ain't over till we die. Learn the lesson, apply it to the next one.
Right. And Max, you know, I've read about your book saying that, you know, you can actually find unexpected money, right? Making opportunities. So can you tell us, like, where is the best place to actually find this kind of opportunity?
Okay. So there's opportunities all around us. Okay.
Right.
There's opportunities all around. Literally, there's so many opportunities all around. But what I will say is what I have found is the quality of opportunities tend to increase depending on the quality of your circle of the people that you're spending your time with. Right. So I could be hanging out with, let's say, guys that do drugs, and the opportunity there is going to be to go get high.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's an opportunity. I have an opportunity to go smoke weed with these guys because they invited me. I could hang out with some businessmen and they might say, hey, dude, there's an opportunity to invest, like I told you, building a building, 300 units. You want to take in this opportunity? Yeah, man, I would love to do that opportunity. So I think part of it is surrounding yourself with the right people. I think that's an extremely important lesson in life, period. You really need to evaluate who it is that you're spending your time with. And that does not discriminate family and friends. Some of my family members that I love, I don't spend time with because I've identified them as like people that I don't want to associate with. Unfortunately, that's how life is, right? So getting opportunities, well, first for me is spending time with the right people and then evaluating your opportunities. What does it really mean? Like what is being presented to you, or where do you see an opportunity to create a business? Most businesses that I see opportunities in this day and age are really service-oriented businesses. You know, there's an opportunity for, I mean, it's not going to be an NFT opportunity for example, open a restaurant, or let's just use simple examples. Let's say a landscaping company or a pool cleaning supply. I don't know, whatever. There's a lot of those type of opportunities. But I mean, I really think it's just like keeping your eyes peeled and then also asking yourself, is there an opportunity here? If you're looking for opportunities, guess what? Opportunities present themselves. If you're looking to get high, that opportunity will present itself. You're naturally going to gravitate towards that opportunity. So I think the first part is kind of like deciding, okay, I'm looking for an opportunity. Doing what? Do you know what you want to do? Right? So I'll give you another example. So I was talking to a kid not too long ago, and he said he wanted to be a lawyer. And I asked him, Yeah, you want to be a lawyer, like an attorney, right? And I asked him, he's like, oh, what's your advice for me? I want to be an attorney. I said, where do you work? And he said, I work at Taco Bell. I said, what the fuck are you going to learn about being an attorney at Taco Bell? You're not going to learn anything. I was like, if you want an opportunity, you want to create opportunities for yourself, go get a job at a law firm, right? Go get a job at a law firm. Even if it's taking out the trash, you're going to hear about legal cases. You're going to hear about legal terms. There's going to be attorneys all around you. And guess what? Over time, you're going to start learning. And maybe one day the boss comes in and says, dude, we're giving away a scholarship to someone who wants to be a paralegal. Jump on it. There's your opportunity. Bam. I'll take it. Right. But it's serving Taco Supremes. You're not going to learn anything. You're not going to get anywhere closer to being an attorney. So it's about putting yourself in that environment and then being awake and aware and telling people, for example, the boss, hey, boss, once you get that job at the law firm, even if it's throwing out the garbage, you tell the guy day one, hey, man, I really want to be a lawyer one day. And I will do anything it takes to become a lawyer. I'll throw out trash for as long as I got to throw out. I want this law firm to give me a scholarship. Maybe you ask for one. Well, a lot of it starts there, asking, hey, I need an opportunity doing this, knowing what I want. I want to be an attorney, right? That's a big part of it. So that's extremely important. And I just want you to know this, because his rebuttal to me was, I've looked at places for jobs and I haven't found anything better than Taco Bell. So we're in a district called Coral Gables in it's bullshit. Well, he said it was bullshit. So it's a long street of offices. And it's basically the distance that I told him to cover was about 3 miles. And I said, listen, I'm going to make you a deal. You're going to walk from here all the way to Bird Road and you're going to knock on every single door. Okay. And you're going to ask for a job and you're going to tell them you're willing to do anything that they have available. If you don't have a job by the time you get to the end of that street, I'll give you $1 million. And the guy's like, oh, well, I'm sure I could get a job like that. I go, exactly. You're full of shit. You could definitely get a job. You're just not trying. You're not applying yourself, you know? Yeah. And I know that you could get a job. I'd get the job. Right. So you got to do it, man. You have to be hungry. You have to go after it, you know? So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. Makes sense. So if you want a job in a restaurant and you're working in somewhere else, then you should, you know, go for that opportunity rather than, you know, keep complaining, hey, I don't have this opportunity and that.
Exactly. Yeah. Put yourself in the environment. And you know what? What could happen, and this happens a lot. Maybe you get the job at the restaurant, you work there for 3 weeks, and you're like, oh my God, that sucks. I don't want to be in the restaurant industry, right?
Yeah. Right.
It's a lot faster to figure that out than it is to, you know, maybe study cooking for 4 years and then get in the restaurant and then decide, oh my God, I don't like this. Right. So get in that environment.
Okay. Got it. And just want to ask you, right, you know, Max, your book, you talk about mental role playing. So can you tell us, like, what is it and how can it prepare you for all the possible challenges and outcomes in life and business?
Yeah, I love mental role playing, man. I love it. I do this all the time. So you could do it by yourself or you could do it with people. So for example, let's create a scenario. Let's say you come to me, Rayson comes to Max and says, Max, I'm really getting, I want to get ready for my interview. Give me a place that you would interview for, like a job. Give me an example of an industry.
Bank, for example. A bank.
Okay. So let's say you're applying to be a bank teller, right? And you come to me and you say, dude, I'm super nervous about my interview at the bank tomorrow. I don't know what to do. I don't know what they're going to say. I don't know what they're going to ask me. And I'm going to tell you, Rayson, here's what we're going to do. Right now, we're going to pretend that I'm the bank manager and you're Rayson. And you're coming in and you're going to apply for the job. Okay? You're going to talk. So what the point of the exercise is, we're going to practice so that you can get comfortable so that when you're in the real life scenario, it's not that bad because we've kind of already done it before. Now, I can challenge you by making the interview very difficult. I can make it easy, but we can play around with it and have fun and take that layer of stress and anxiety out A, B, make you a little sharper and more ready for your interview. So let's do it right now. Let's pretend I'm the bank manager and you just walked in and you want a job and you're going to ask me for the job. Go ahead. Knock, knock, knock.
No, who's there? No, just kidding. But hi. Hi, Max. Mr. Max, my name is Rayson, and I would like to actually apply for a job as a bank teller in your bank. Can you tell me what's the thing that I should do next?
Well, you know what? We're actually looking for new bank tellers. Why don't we have a seat over here and let's talk a little bit? Is that cool? You have time?
Yep, I have time.
Okay, great. So tell me about yourself, Rayson. Have you ever worked in the banking industry before?
No, I've not been in the banking industry before, but I really am interested in this because I just graduated from the degree in banking and finance. So I'm a fresh grad.
Okay. So what made you interested in becoming a bank teller?
Well, I love to provide. I love the how bank tellers actually provided awesome services to us, to me, especially when I was younger. I was inspired by this lady. Her name is Marilyn, and she was so nice and so friendly, and she gave us a very great experience in the bank. And I, after experiencing that, and I realized that, man, banking industry, a lot of times many people ain't giving this kind of experience to their clients anymore. I would like to be of service in this manner.
Very nice. Okay, so would you always want to be a bank teller, like a career bank teller, or would you have aspirations of growing within the organization and doing other things like lending or branch manager or something like that?
I have aspirations as well, and I would like to be a branch manager as the as my career progresses.
So what's your ultimate goal?
My ultimate goal in banking will be to be a director for the bank itself. And it is something that I would like to be because I have family member who is director of this bank. And I've felt like, wow, this is something that I truly want in terms of financial freedom and the I would say, the experiences that I can actually get from this kind of freedom in while working as a director, in a sense.
Do you have any do you have an MBA or an undergrad or any of that stuff?
Yes, I have. I have. MBA.
MBA. Okay. Would you be willing to go back to school if the bank sponsored your education for maybe a couple of courses for things you might need to learn?
Yeah, definitely. I'm open to learn more new things.
Okay. And are you available to work on Saturdays and Sundays?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, great. All right, cool. Well, I will get your information and I will be contacting you and letting you know if there's an opportunity within the bank, within this bank. There actually might be another opportunity for another bank across town, maybe 20 minutes away. Is that something you'd be open to?
Yeah, sure. I'm open to that as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for coming in. I'll get your information. I'll let you know what we come up with.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. All right. So now let's talk about this.
Okay.
We learned a few things. First thing we learned is you want to be a bank director. So right off the bat, if I'm coming into this job interview, I'm going to say, hey, I want to be a bank director. Like, I want this job, but my goal is to be a bank director. I'm not going to wait for him to ask me. I want him to know that I'm looking to grow, right? So that's something that we just learned through this conversation. Secondly, you learned that you're willing to go cross town. Maybe going across town is not a big deal for you, right? And you got a little bit more comfortable with the conversation, right? You learned that you are willing to work Saturdays and Sundays, that you're willing to do continuing education for training. There's things that you discovered, even about yourself here, during this exercise. Now, if we were to do it again, which we could, but we're not going to, I would get more information and then hit you with more information, right? And ask you more questions and maybe be a little tough. Oh, we're not hiring, whatever, you know, get lost, shit like that, to then get you to be like, no, man, you know, who is hiring? Who could I call? Or things like that. So it just kind of gets you to be a little bit more loose, know exactly what you want, what you should probably be saying, questions that you should be asking. For example, at the end of this interview, what you should have said was, when should I check back in with you? Right? I said, I'll call you.
Right.
But you should have said, when should I follow up with you, Mr. Branch Manager Max Lewis? Right? So these are little things that we work on now. That now when we do this again, you're going to be better. Hey, I want this job. I've always wanted it because I love customer service. My intention is to become a director one day. What do I need to do to be a director?
Right.
What do I need an MBA? Because I have one. If that's a benefit or not a benefit. Is there any training that I should be taking? Sign me up right now. I'm ready. Right. Like, oh, I'll call you later. Right. When can I follow up with you? Because I really want this job. Like, if I'm the manager, I want that eagerness to come through. Who am I going to hire? The guy who's like, yeah, I really like it because I like customer service. Or the guy who's like, man, I'll do anything. I want to be the director of this place. Okay. I'll work 7 days a week if I have to, Saturdays and Sundays. I'm willing to travel and I'm willing to do extra training if the job requires it. So let me know. I'm ready. Oh, we'll let you know. When can I follow up with you? It's a lot different. That's like, whoa, this guy's like, he really wants his damn job. Right.
So anyway, right.
Okay. So this is an example. Got it. Right. You got it. So this is an example of role playing. And we could use it in any scenario. Your friend's nervous for a day. You're nervous for the job. Whatever. You know, we could figure things out and just get them to be more comfortable. Then if we stop this podcast right now and you literally walk to the nearest bank, you probably do a lot better than had you not had this role. Right?
Yeah. And I would have asked for his contact as well and say, hey, when can I call you and all this other stuff, right? I get where you're coming from.
By picking it apart, we see opportunities. Where could we improve? What did we learn about ourselves? What could we do better next time? Right. Cool, man.
Okay. Nice. Cool. And last but not least, I have one last question for you.
Sure.
In fact, two more questions. Okay, so I saw that you actually wrote on starting local market, pinpointing competitors' weaknesses. So can you give us a brief rundown on how we can actually study our local market, pinpoint competitors' weaknesses, and even have a greater chance at success in our business?
Okay, so I'll give you the strategy of how to be successful. Identifying the competitor, I mean, that should be easy. If you want to go in banking, how many banks are there? If you want to sell water, who's selling water around here, right? So that should be the easy part. Now, identifying weaknesses usually comes down to service and value. What does that mean? Okay. So for example, let's use the banking, since we're already on banking. Let's use banking. Let's say your competition is the bank across the street. Okay. And let's say that they're not open Saturday and Sunday. And the ATM has been giving people problems. And the lady at the front has a shitty attitude. Right. Let's say you've learned those things by people who come to your bank. Right. And those are some things that you've learned. So what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to make sure that your teller has a phenomenal attitude, that your ATM works. And we're going to open Saturdays and Sundays, right? That's going to be the easy stuff to do if you can open Saturdays and Sundays. But if it's me, I'm opening. Like, I'm figuring out a way because I want to have that competitive advantage. But then we're going to take it a step further. And this is where the value comes in. I'm going to start thinking, okay, I'm in the bank industry. what do people that are banking want, or what are some of the things that I can offer them that don't cost me a lot of money, but the customer will perceive as insanely valuable, right? So in every industry and in every situation, it's different. But let's just brainstorm here for a second and see what we could come up with off the top of our heads. So for example, people come into banks all day long. They're usually working. What's something that we could give them that they would really appreciate, but it wouldn't cost the bank a lot of money? That it's kind of associated with the banking industry. Well, give me an idea of what you think.
I would say that probably, I believe it will be like the loans will have better amounts.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Big item. That's a big item. We'll get there. We're gonna come back. You're a guy who's living his life, and you're walking into this bank as a customer, right? You're a normal guy, and you're busy. Shit's happening all day long. You just got to pop into the bank real quick to get out some money or to talk to a branch manager about a fee that you got or something like that. What's something that I can do from the second you walk in the door to kind of win you over just a little bit? Just get you to be like, man, this is a cool bank. This is a good bank.
The service that they provide.
Boom. Okay, great. So let's start with, I'm going to have someone greet every person that comes through the door. Hey, Rayson, how's it going? What do you need today? Oh, I need XYZ. Here, let me walk you over there. Hey, this guy needs a loan. Have a seat. They're going to take care of you. Let me know if you need anything. That's one. Bam, that's an easy one. I'll give you another one, which I love, and I use it all the time. Coffee. Coffee doesn't cost shit. Would you like a cup of coffee?
Yes.
Free cup of coffee from the bank? You know what that costs? Pennies. Pennies. Hey, man, you thirsty? You want some coffee? Oh, I'd love a cup of coffee. Perfect. Here's a nice warm cup of coffee. Probably cost us 10 cents. So now we get free coffee. Doesn't cost anything. Immediately, the customer's like, oh, this is cool. The bank across the street doesn't give free coffee, right? You got the guy who's going to greet you and give you great service. You got the guy, another person giving you free coffee, let's say. What's another little thing that we can do? Maybe we're going to give out breath mints at the teller. Maybe it's a little piece of gum. Little tiny things, little things like this, make a huge impact on the mood of the customer. You don't want coffee, but maybe you want a piece of gum. And when you get there, you're talking, the guy goes, hey, by the way, you want a piece of gum? Oh, shit, actually, I would love a piece of gum. Maybe you don't want coffee, maybe you don't want gum, but maybe you want some water. Hey, do you want a free bottle of water? All our customers get a free bottle of water. Water costs the bank 6 cents. Let's say a bottle of water or a cup of water, whatever you want to give them. But you start making these little creature comforts. All of a sudden, people are happy. They're not in a hurry. If I'm talking to you about my loan and I got a nice warm cup of coffee there and we're sitting, I'm already more relaxed. Look at me, I'm sitting in my chair. Oh, man, that's all right. So let's talk about this loan, right? We're going to get to the rates later. We're going to get to all the big ticket items. We can get there. But let's start at ground level. The bank across the street is not doing any of these three things. How much money did we spend? Nothing. Coffee doesn't cost anything. Water doesn't cost anything. If you want to give them a bottle of water, it's going to cost a little more, but you could give them cups of water. You be the judge. Candies at the teller doesn't cost anything, right? Those are little tiny things that you can work on to have a competitive advantage. And if we had the time, we could sit here and come up with 10 more, right? Better, more comfortable chairs, better lighting, low lighting, an area to be private, whatever. We could come up with all kinds of cool shit. And then when we're done coming up with cool shit, we're going to ask the customers, what would you do to make this business better? If you could change anything about my bank, what would it be? And then listen, I hate this fucking door. Okay, man, you know what? You're the third person this week who said they hate this door. Maybe we need to fix the door, right?
Right.
The bathroom is horrible. Maybe we make the nicest bathroom in all of banking. And people even talk about how cool our bathroom is. And people come in to see the bathroom. And then the guy that greets them is like, hey, are you a member of our bank? No, I just came to see the bathroom. Well, dude, who are you banking with? Oh, we're banking with the guys. Bro, we have better rates. Here, man, here, have a cup of coffee. Sit down with Rayson over here. He's going to tell you, got a customer. You feel me? So right. that creating that, that gives you the advantage. That's how you kick everybody's ass.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, wow, this is a great conversation that we are having, and a lot of ideas are coming out, man. Wow. Simple yet very effective.
Oh, it's and, super effective. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Super effective. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. I mean, like, you know, having coffee, water, mint, and whatsoever not, and not many banks are actually having this, and poop, that is the advantage that we're getting. The advantage that we're getting from all our competition. And yes. when and then after that, giving our customers what they wanted or what they needed, and then after that asking them for feedback, and then give them even more from then on. It's even spectacular for the business to grow to grow a lot more in yeah. a sense, to scale it up in a sense as well.
You give them more than they expect.
Yeah.
You give them more than they expect, man. And you don't ask for anything in return. And that's, you know, you create like a raving fan, right? Like someone's like, man, this bank, this is the coolest freaking bank I've ever been to. Right? And the best part is, again, we haven't really spent any money. We haven't spent much money at all. You know, mm-hmm. we haven't spent much money. Those things that we mentioned are not expensive. And like I said, we could go down that rabbit hole and make things even better and offer more little things. And dude, you're going to have the best bank in Singapore.
Right, right, right. I agree with you on that. And Max, you know, as we're coming to the end of the podcast, I have one last question for you. And that is this, Max, imagine this, you suddenly lose everything, your money, your reputation, your assets. What will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
From day one to day 30, I would look for opportunities in some type of organization. Like, is it still me or am I like a different guy? Is it still me?
It's still you.
I'm still me?
You're still the same. Oh. You're still sane and everything.
Oh yeah, if it's still me, and I'm gonna go to the biggest business that I can find that I have leverage with, like where I might know someone, and I would do. This is what I would do. I'd say, look, let me run the business. Let's say a business making $5 million a year. I'll say, let me run the business. I'm gonna increase the profits. Give me 12 months. Let's say. And give me just 30% of whatever I increase the profits. And I'll make my money like that. I make a lot of money like that. Because I can make more money out of any business. I guarantee that. So I'd get the opportunity to be in control of something and do what I just, it could be that bank. Hey, make me the branch manager of this bank. I'm gonna increase deposits, loans, everything. Just give me the opportunity to do it. And then based off of whatever I bring in, give me a percentage. Let's say it's 30% or 50, whatever. I'm gonna negotiate the hell out of that deal. I'm gonna do the best I can. I gotta put myself in that situation. But rest assured, I'm gonna try to get the absolute best deal that I can for myself. But I know that I'm gonna provide value. So it's gotta be a win-win for everybody involved. But yeah, I could do that in any business.
Okay. Oh, this is interesting. This is good. I mean, like, different people has different kind of way of doing it, but yours is very interesting. You go straight to the big business, even though your reputation has been tarnished in a sense, even though your money has been affected, you don't have any much cash with you and all, and yet you still want to go to the big organizations to you know, offer your services to them.
Yeah.
Is it because you had connections with them back then, so probably that's why they will get you back, or
I'm just confident. I'm confident in my ability to produce more money out of any opportunity. Very confident in that ability. It doesn't have to necessarily be someone that I know. Obviously, it'd be easier if it's someone you know because you have a reputation of making money. They'll say, "Okay, this guy actually knows what the hell he's doing. Let's give him a shot," right? So I just know I've done it. I've been coaching and business consulting for people for so many times, and I have made people millions of dollars with advice. Hey, do this. And they do it and it works. So I'm just very confident in that ability. And there's a lot of opportunities out there, you know? There's a lot of opportunities. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a large business. I would just say if I could, the larger the business I could get, I'd do it. Because it's, you know, the average business from start, from zero to, I think it's $2 million in revenue, it's a five-year gap. So when the average business from zero to $2 million in top line revenue is 5 years. So why would I go after a business that, you know, like, let's say it's a startup or not having a lot of revenue when I could just go after the big guy, like just go after the big guy, you know? Right. If you knew a guy that was making $1 million a year or 2 million and you asked him, do you want to make four? What do you think he would say?
Definitely.
He'd say yes. Right. So that's what I'd be looking for, that guy. I'd be like, what'd you make? 2 million? I'll get you four by the end of the year. Give me the opportunity. Right. And then work my ass off. Right. There's a lot of work
to
do.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Awesome. Awesome. Well, you know, thank you so much, you know, Max, for so much of value bombs that you've dropped over here in this podcast. We really appreciate you. And can you tell us where can my followers, subscribers look for you on social media?
Absolutely. So I'm active on Instagram. Who is Max Lewis? And whoismaxlewis.com is our website, but you're not going to find much there. Just, you know, links to other stuff. But Instagram is probably the app that I'm most active on. And the book you can get on Amazon. You can get, it's Who is Max Lewis, L-E-W-I-S. And you can also get the Audible if you want to listen to it on Audible. And there's an ebook. So there's plenty of options depending on how you like to consume your content, your book.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much once again for those of you who are tuning in to the podcast as well. We really appreciate you. So stay tuned for the next episode of The Regacy Show. We will have a lot of amazing guests and a lot of amazing value for you in the upcoming episodes as well. So stay tuned. All right. And goodbye from Singapore and US. And take care.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Thank you everyone for listening to another episode of The Regacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called The Regacy Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right. So with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of The Regacy Show.